Okay, welcome to Season 2, Episode 26, that's also Episode 58 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Rob, and I am with someone who also gets critical updates through floppy disk, Hugh.
Yeah, it's very painful and awkward, but it works.
At least your updates are small, unless you have a lot of floppy disks.
Yeah. I still remember, and this will come up later in the show, back when Windows 95 launched, because I was working at a video game store during the Windows 95 launch, but we also sold, we were sort of transitioning from being a productivity store to a video game store, if that makes sense. Like, originally, Electronics Boutique mostly sold business software, and then started phasing in video games, and by like 1995, it was three quarters video games, like one quarter productivity. But Windows 95 was a huge, huge thing. And I remember Windows 95, if you wanted to buy, at the time, the full version of Windows 95, that only came on floppy disk, because I guess it wasn't a given that you had a CD-ROM driver. Right?
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. Think about it.
Yeah, no, I know.
Like, boot from CD wasn't a thing in 1995. Like, all computers can do boot from CD now, but that was not a thing that existed in 1995. So to install Windows 95, you would have to have a CD driver installed already, which, if this was a blank computer, you didn't have.
Yeah, I had OS2 Warp on floppy. If I remember right, it was like 28 or 32 floppies, something like that. Just like nightmare.
Yeah, but good times. Hey, so what have you been up to?
Oh, man, let's see. I watched that Amico reveal. What would you call that? A reveal? Showcase, I guess? I guess it was a showcase.
Yeah, sure. Teaser trailer or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm even more excited for that than I am the PS5 for some reason. I guess because it's something different and all the games look pretty solid and simple and yada, yada, yada. Like, I don't think it'll... There's not much to let me down on, you know, so pretty excited for that, other than, you know, right after they did the showcase, they also postponed it till April.
Yeah. Right. It's like coming out April next year or something now, right?
Yeah. It was supposed to be, I think, October 21st was my ship date. Now it's April something. But yeah, so I'm excited for that. And what else? I've been, have you seen the Switch game, Lonely Mountains Downhill?
I never even heard of it.
Okay, it's a cheaper game on the Switch, and it's fairly addictive. You are just on a mountain bike, and it's pretty simple, 4D boxing type graphics, and you're going down a big mountain. And, you know, there's kind of like the Goose game, there's, you know, things you could do, like get down this mountain in, you know, so many seconds, where you have to find like little shortcuts. Don't die more than 7 times, which is actually really hard. Yeah, I really recommend this game, and I think it's an indie developer, so it's always good to support those guys.
So is it like my favorite, is it like my favorite event in Atari 2600 California games, the downhill bike race?
I think it is that event, yes, okay. In 3D. I can't recommend this game enough. You know, it's nothing groundbreaking, but... it's a fun little escape, you know, and again, we're all kind of stuck at home. So it's another reason to another way to kind of escape. And then I haven't had much time, but playing some Final Fantasy VII. Every time I died in it, I never really read the warnings it gave you. I just kind of just kept mashing the buttons to let me play more. And yeah, so when you do that, it doesn't give you the experience points you've earned since the last checkpoint. And I wondered why bosses were just annihilating me. Mm-hmm. So I had to do chapter 12, where you're going up that tower to beat Rude and what's his name? Rude and someone. I don't know. But
I'm trying to. So that's like, I guess, are there really spoiler alerts for a game that is based on something from 1997?
I'll just go out and say it right before the plate falls.
Okay. Yeah. And, yeah, that's a really cool part of the game. But that is hard. It is really, that is a really hard part of the game.
That was rough. But so I just kept doing it and dying and going back to the checkpoint and earning those experience points. And finally, I leveled up enough, just like in East. I just had to keep doing that till I could just run over the boss. So I guess it does have some East elements in there. But I'm enjoying it. I almost jumped off it until I kind of realized it was me that was playing it wrong, you know. But yeah, that's about it. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, I've been playing Uncharted 4. I'm probably getting near the ending.
It's a long game.
It is a long game. I really like it. Really, really good game. But again, it really is like Final Fantasy VII Remake. Like the whole bit in Final Fantasy VII Remake where like you and Aerith are just walking through a long series of tunnels, like hopping over things and talking. That's also Uncharted 4.
Yeah.
Like I can see how these games all kind of inspire each other. So let's see. What did I put in the notes here? I guess I'm not pre-ordering an Analog Pocket.
Yeah, that was like 3 minutes or something was up.
Yeah, so maybe I'll get one of these. I don't know. I could get one of those systems on Alibaba that, you know, can emulate everything, I guess. But I got to go first get a burner credit card before I do that.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that? When you order from one of these sites, like you go and you buy like a MasterCard gift card and then use that to order from Alibaba because you don't trust them with your credit. I mean, again, for whatever reason, I let Jimmy John's keep my credit card number, which seems even shadier than Alibaba, but
I think I always use PayPal for Alibaba. Okay. I think you can on Alibaba Express and PayPal gives you one extra layer there.
Yeah. PayPal with their maximum 12 character passwords or whatever they have.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. but anyhow, I guess I'm not pre-ordering one of those. Maybe I will get, I don't know. Is there a kit where you like buy your own Raspberry Pi Zero and you put it in a kit? Does anyone sell something like that?
Yes. There's it looks like an original Game Boy, but with four buttons.
Okay. So I might just do that instead. That seems like more interesting to me. What else here? So yeah, I'm going to stick with Treasure Hunter themed games for at least one more episode after this. Mm-hmm. And then I will probably move on to a different genre.
Yeah. Usually we try to move on to football or something like that, but, not really a thing.
Yeah. I think, I don't know what's going on with football this year. I mean, I have a rough idea. Like I hear college football, or at least the conferences that don't win every year are canceled. Okay. Is that right? The Big Ten said they're not going to play and they're called the Big Ten despite having 12 teams.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Obviously academics is not the focus of these schools. But like the Southern conferences where like 9 out of 10 of the last college champions came from are still playing.
Mm-hmm. So they got to make that money.
I guess so. I don't know, man. It doesn't seem worth it to me, but I'm not the one playing. So
yeah.
All right. Want to get onto the show?
We have a lot of news.
Yeah, we sure do. Sure do. I guess we're gonna start off with the sad news. Bill English, the co-creator of the computer mouse, passed away at age 91. It's always sad when someone dies. 91's a pretty good run.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if you asked me if the inventor of the mouse was still alive, I wouldn't know. I guess I would have thought they were younger than 91.
Yeah. So he was, middle-aged when he invented it, I guess. But yeah, quite a legacy.
Yeah. I was picturing someone that was like 19 in their garage inventing it.
Yeah, no, it was someone our age.
Yeah. Well, our age at the time of inventing it, not...
Yes. I'm not 91.
Yeah, so there's still hope. I still can invent some great accessory. And worked at the Xerox Research Center for a long time.
But, so that's sad. Moving on to good news.
Yeah.
Summer games done quick. Starting August 16th, which will probably be about the time you hear this. But yeah, they've raised what, like $22 million over the years. And
yeah, I will be donating for sure. I donate to all these. The winter one, I watch a little more religiously just because it's winter and there's less to do. They have that one in January, and January is kind of unbearable, but I'm not really going anywhere in August right now either. So usually I have like an old laptop here. And I just have it on a screen full time that whole week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like our Olympics, I guess.
there's a ton of retro games, and there's a bunch of newer games too. There's some really obscure retro games on this list also. They always throw in like a couple games that nobody remembers.
Like which one? I'm looking at this here.
I think, let's see here. I looked at this list. So they're doing Legacy of the Wizard, which I think people have heard of, but not a lot of people have played.
I've definitely not played.
Okay, they're doing Power Blade, which I don't think a lot of people have played either. Legacy of the Wizard, you know, is a Falcom game, and it's part of the Dragon Slayer series. So,
okay,
if you play like the modern, Trails of Cold Steel games or whatever, those all started from like the same original franchise as Legacy of the Wizard. It's hard to believe those games are related at all, but they share a very distant ancestor. Breath of the Wild, they're doing the All Dogs speedrun, which is a fun one.
All Dogs?
That is where you feed all the dogs in the game the fastest.
I never heard of that one. That's great.
Yeah, it's a category someone invented. And if you play Breath of the Wild, you'll get that. Let's see. Adventures of Lolo 2 is on there, which I assume people have heard of, but that's like one of those, $1,000 on eBay type of games.
Yeah.
Keo Flying Squadron 2 might be another $1,000 on eBay game. But I just like they do a really good mix of new games and classic games. And that's what I really enjoy about this event.
Yeah.
I get to see stuff that I have played 100 times, and then I see stuff I've never played before.
And it goes till the 23rd, but it's midnight the 22nd, I guess midnight the 23rd. So you have many, many days to watch this, and it's just jam-packed. Like every hour, every half hour, there's something.
Yep, and then like a lot of contests. You know, they have prizes and all kinds of stuff. Obviously, the format will be different because it won't be in person. But I think they'll do just fine.
I'm sure we will report on some of it.
All right. Now you can download and run the 1997 Macintosh OS 8.1 on Windows, Mac, or Linux as a standalone application.
So this is not as cool as it sounds.
Okay.
So it sounds cool, and it is. I mean, I could not code this, so let's just... Yeah. Throw that out there right away. But you could already do this on archive.org, but you couldn't download and install it. And so someone converted this into an Electron application. And Electron is a JavaScript framework where you can make like hybrid web page applications that feel like a desktop app. So you're pretty much just running what was already on archive.org, like it's the same thing. So still pretty cool, but it's not like, yeah, I don't know. It's like an app that's emulating, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. The headline is cooler than the end result. Sure.
Yes. Yeah. I guess more sad news here. Akihabara will look different after it closes this arcade. So, Sega's closing its arcade Tokyo, and that is sad. And I've never been to Japan, and this would have been on my hit list when I go for the first time.
No, I'm planning to go in a couple of years. Luckily, I had been planning. So here's this idea that I had. Like, Universal Studios was opening the Nintendo World. It was supposed to open this year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not. And I was going to go like 5 years after that, because I figure by then the initial like rush will have died down.
And the one in Orlando would have opened.
Right. But I don't want to go through that the first year either. Right. That sounds miserable.
Yes.
So I'm kind of waiting it out. I was going to wait out 5 years, but now that plan, I'm like, do I now wait it out 4 years or just stick with the original timeline I had in mind? So I've got to figure that out. But it'll be around the time, this is what's sad, man. It'll be like around the time my youngest kid is graduating high school. So it'll also be like high school graduation trip, which is weird to think about.
Yeah, that is weird.
But hey, kids got to graduate eventually. Sega apologizes after executive says Puyo Puyo players eat beef bowls with cheese. Why is that an insult?
Okay, so apparently, in Japanese or some Japanese circles, I don't know, but if you allude to someone looking like they eat beef bowls with cheese, it means they're, listeners, please correct me if I'm wrong. Uh-huh. It means they have like acne and they just kind of look like the guy that lives in their mom's basement, kind of, you know, out of shape kind of thing.
But do you know how many times I've like made tacos at home and had like a bunch of leftover taco meat? And then the next day I throw that in a bowl and throw some cheese on top and microwave it for like a minute.
Yeah, well, it looks like Sega has a problem with you.
Fine. Well, I got a problem with them. The picture that they have of this article, quite frankly, looks delicious.
It looks amazing. It really does look good.
It's like two, they have like Swiss and cheddar on this thing, man. And a little bit of onion. I think there's like a rice foundation on the bottom. Come on, man. That looks awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. This looks incredible.
Is there an equivalent of that in the U.S.? You insult someone, you must like this type of food. I'm not even drawing a cultural analogy.
Maybe like you look like you supersize everything. I don't know.
Maybe.
Too much Coca-Cola. I don't know.
Yeah, they don't do the supersize anymore, do they?
Yeah. Well, no, they just call it large, don't they? But here, to quote it, it's a little bit hard to pinpoint, but a chi gyu could possibly best be described as a stereotypical nerd who would fall somewhere into the booger class of the Revenge of the Nerds taxonomy.
Uh-huh.
So I guess booger was disgusting and not too bright?
He was. I have seen Revenge of the Nerds. That's a movie that definitely does not hold up today.
Definitely a product of its time.
Yeah. There is a lot of things wrong with that movie.
Have you ever seen Revenge of the Nerds 3 or 4? Because those exist.
It's possible I have. I you know, when I was younger, I did have just a TV with like a UHF antenna.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good chance I saw them. I don't recall them, though.
Developer announces snowboarding game updates forum thread he started 13 years ago. So apparently this guy has been making a snowboarding game since 2000. So yeah, he started this in 2007 and it's called Shredders.
I can believe it taking 13 years to make a game. I mean, it took me a pretty long time to get one very small Sega Genesis demo together. So.
And he did say he had a few false starts in there. Like he's written a few proofs of concept and, yeah, you know, it's, which happens. I do that all the time.
So this kind of looks like a GameCube game.
Mm-hmm.
Looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I like it.
I mean, it may have started as a GameCube game.
It kinda. Very well could have, yes. After 8 years, Space Quest Spiritual Reboot is playable. Is this like a Kickstarter that just took forever to deliver?
Yeah, and it's by the original two guys that did Space Quest. So this is called Space Venture. It's going to be $30. Okay. If you Kickstarted it, you are beta testing it right now. I'm going to play this because I'm a giant Space Quest fan. But I'm going to hold my judgment because I haven't played it. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
But it does look funny.
Yeah, I've never played a Space Quest game for more than a minute or two.
I love them.
You can take away my retro gamer cred card.
Well, you're not. I'm more into the Sierra games, I think, than you are. You know,
right?
I went Sierra instead of Lucas, which I probably chose not the right path, but there you go.
Yeah, I played more Lucas games than Sierra games. But still, I tend to play a lot more like RPGs than point and click adventure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you want to play Banjo and Kazooie and Zelda at the same time?
No.
Banjo Kazooie meets Legend of Zelda in Epic Jiggies of Time N64 mod. That is a hard title to read for me.
This should be, again, we need a section called like projects that will get a cease and desist letter.
So this is, it looks like it's on the Ocarina of Time engine,
mm-hmm.
but it's Banjo Kazooie and looks pretty well done. Apparently he did another one called Banjo Kazooie, the Bear Waker, which
okay. I can't tell what that I can imagine is. What that is. I got an idea what that might be. Yeah.
But yeah, I did not try this one out, but it looks pretty neat. One I did try out. I don't know if you watched this video yet or tried out this ROM, but, Super Mario Freedom.
No, I did not try this yet.
Oh, man. This video, it just blows my mind. So Super Mario Freedom is another Super Mario hack. It's like three episodes in a row, at least, that we've been talking about Mario ROM hacks. This is crazy. So it has... It looks like a hack of Super Mario Brothers 2 from, you know, Japan, not Super Mario USA.
Mm-hmm.
But it has Super Mario Land music. It has Super Mario Brothers 2 music and characters. Out of nowhere, you're dropped into, and I couldn't place this right away, but Zach did. You're dropped into Mega Man 2's Quick Man stage okay. with music and everything. This is the craziest ROM hack I have ever seen. Plus, it has overworlds and, yeah, it's just nuts.
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's a ROM hack and not, like, something they just built in a game engine.
Just insane. Just total insanity.
So, is this on romhacking.net or not yet?
I forget where that's from because I just linked the video to it.
I can go check romhacking.net. And it would be under newest hacks, and I don't see it yet. They may not have submitted it there, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's different font that looks more like Super Mario World.
But there is a brightness fix for Disney King's The Jungle Book on NES, if you need that.
Oh, I should mention this also. Super Mario Freedom also has all new boss fights, which look really fun. All right, what do we got next?
Kansas Fest 2021 announced. So hopefully we are past this whole thing by 2021.
Yeah.
But barring unforeseen circumstances, it will be July 19th through 25th at Rockhurst University in Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah, this is a bucket list thing for me to finally go to Kansas Fest.
How far away is that from wherever it is I live? Let's take a look here. Sorry. Directions. Yeah, let's go directions. Service hours may vary because of COVID-19. All right. 8 hours. Ooh, and it's an L. Like the route is an L. It's not like there's no like straight line.
Nice.
This is an ugly drive. I mean, it's just west to Des Moines and then straight south from Des Moines.
Yeah, and if you look around there's not too much eat around that university or to do. So when you're there, you're there.
I bet. It says Kansas City, but so I assume you don't have to go far to get to something, but yeah, directly by there is not much, man. And I gotta tell you, like, I've driven to Des Moines a couple times. The drive, once you get like Western Illinois is pretty much just a wasteland. Mm-hmm. And then once you get to Iowa, there's like trees and rest stops again. And Des Moines itself is pretty nice. I don't think the drive from southern, like through southern Iowa and northern Missouri, is going to be very scenic. I just have a feeling.
Mm. Yeah, probably so that's, not.
that part sounds rough.
Yeah.
But Kansas City, I've heard, is a great city, and I've heard there's good food, and I've heard good things about the city. So if you could turn it into like a weekend trip, you know, like you do the conference and then you, geez, it looks like it's an hour drive into the city from there.
And it's crazy. I mean, the conference is 5 days. That's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Seems someday.
Someday. Yeah. I just don't know if we're going to be past like this whole infectious disease thing by next summer.
Yeah. Dystopian future. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something we kind of reported on before, right?
Yeah, we talked about this. Someone did an article about they were doing a demake of Myst. That thing still hasn't gotten a takedown letter, and they have now released the a playable version.
Yeah, these images look pretty cool. I haven't looked at this video yet.
It looks as good as you could get Myst to look on the Apple II, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool idea. So you can play it.
And then another demake, but more out of spite than anything, the Halo Infinite trailer was turned into a Nintendo 64 game.
Yeah, what's the deal with the Halo Infinite trailer? Was that poorly received or something? I didn't.
Yeah, because it's for the next Xbox that's coming out, and they showed the trailer, and everyone's like, this looks like a game that could be played on the current Xbox, so why is this your big game? So that's why they made it into Nintendo 64, to kind of prove a point, like, this actually looks cooler as a Nintendo 64 game. Now, I don't think it's really a Nintendo 64 game, only because you could see more than 10 feet in front of you without it fogging out. But okay. That's just a guess. I don't really know.
I'm looking at the Halo Infinite trailer right now, and I guess my question is, how much better do you expect a game to look?
I know, exactly. But I don't know, this could be a Super Mario 64 mod, because at about the minute and 15 second mark, you get a star. And then does the Mario 64 theme when you get that star. So, kind of funny.
Let's see. Game Boy as MIDI synthesizer.
Yes. So, this is insane. And it's a breadboard with more wires than I can count. But the Game Boy is used in a lot of chiptunes. And this breadboard will connect your Game Boy to a MIDI trigger, so a MIDI keyboard or sequencer, and then you can use that to play Game Boy sounds with MIDI. I'm shocked there's not an easier way to do this, but this is crazy. Not much more to say about it.
Oh, yeah. So what we talked about at the top of the show, Boeing 747 still use floppy disks to get critical software updates.
Do you have a problem with this at all?
No, I don't think I do. I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think a USB drive would be less secure. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're worried about the system being hacked, I mean, the Iranian nuclear plants got hacked through a USB drive.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back and look at the Stuxnet story, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's not, just because, like, vulnerabilities from inserting a floppy disk, I believe those have been completely solved if they ever existed in the first place. And I know that at one point I had this is back in some previous lifetime, I had a portable CD player on an airplane, and the stewardess said I had to turn it off because the laser could make the plane crash.
Wow.
I don't believe that, but I suppose that's why they don't have DVD drives instead. And I suspect the software updates aren't more than a couple of discs anyways.
Yeah, yeah. So there's no point to updating it, really.
Yeah, I would like to think the Boeing 747 firmware is pretty debugged by now.
Yeah, what, it's been 40, 50 years, something like that.
So it's interesting, but I guess I'm not... I guess I don't have a problem with it, no. I don't think I could come up with a better option.
Exactly, yeah. And bits are bits, so... I'm sure there's error, you know, correcting or whatever in there, so I think it's fine. I've used floppy disks for a long time and didn't have much of a problem, but I don't fly 400 people around in the sky, so I don't know.
This is 747. You got more than, wait, is it 400?
Yeah, that's correct. I don't know. What do we got next?
Probably something I added, right? Oh, yeah, so if you like books about video games, there's another bundle from the fine folks at Story Bundle called the Exclusive Retro Game Bundle. I don't know, it seems like anybody can buy it. I don't know how exclusive it is. But it has a couple of, newer books, and then things like that are maybe a little bit smaller. But it's got stuff like Hardcore Gaming 101, Volume 6, Namco Arcade, which I think is fairly new. Has a book about the history of platform games, another game dev book, just a lot of different things. And for $12 or $14, you can unlock all of them.
And we've had one of these authors on our show.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. Yeah, it should be called the Exclusively Retro Game Bundle, right?
Could be. Oh, I see why, because some of these books are exclusive to the bundle. David Craddock, who we had on the show, he has a book in here that is exclusive to this bundle. It's not being sold anywhere else yet. It probably will be on Amazon someday, but for the moment, it is only in this bundle.
That's cool. Very cool.
I mean, I already bought this. My reading backlog is at least as big as my video game backlog.
So. Yeah, yeah.
And then Galloping Ghost Arcade. I'm here in Illinois. I don't know how Galloping Ghost Arcade is currently open right now. I don't know what conditions are for it being open. But they did unveil a machine. I guess it's an also exclusive machine. The Sega R360. And apparently this is the only publicly playable machine. They have a couple of other machines like Beavis and Butthead where more than one machine exists, but they have the only one that's open for the public to play.
Mm-hmm.
So this machine originally sold for $170,000.
Oh. Yeah, they said they need a generator or something to run it.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So I never heard of this before, and I watched a YouTube video on it, and I would definitely vomit if I was in this thing. It spins all around.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing you would go to a specialty, a Battletech kind of place to play.
Or a science museum or mm-hmm. something would have something like this.
Yeah. Yeah, I would not play this either. Again, I don't know how they're open right now. But probably a bunch of rules.
They do these reveals online too on Twitch and YouTube, or Twitch or YouTube, I forget which, but they're kind of fun to watch. Yeah, this is a crazy one.
Yeah.
When I'm not afraid to touch things anymore, I will go back there.
Yeah, I think it's okay to touch things as long as you wash your hands thoroughly afterwards.
Yeah.
I don't think the problem, I guess for me, the problem is not, I don't know. I don't think I would have a huge problem if they weren't crowded. If they had some sort of only so many people per day can enter.
Mm-hmm. Which they might have that.
They might, yeah. I don't know. But they got to make money. I feel like businesses like this is so hard for them right now.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah.
So I feel, and you know, the thing is, if you go to like Midwest Gaming Classic, I mean, they're always there. They bring rare machines. You know, they take the risk of hauling these rare machines up to Milwaukee, and yeah, they're just great. I mean, through them, I've played a few games again that no one else, like, there's no other place in the world you could play them. You know, Primal Rage 2, Beavis and Butthead, Arcus, I think, is maybe another exclusive game that they have.
Yeah, it's a fantastic place. And they're really helpful there, too. They are not one of those places that minds you asking questions.
No, no. That's also where I learned that Primal Rage 2 is, like, a lot more fun than the first game.
Way more fun, yeah. Yeah. That was the sole reason I went there when I did, just to play that game.
And then two things out of the Giga Leak.
Yeah, I'm conflicted on still talking about the Giga Leak, but I thought these were some tidbits where we could hopefully just put it to rest after we talk through this. Yeah, the first link is on Fanbyte. The 10 coolest SNES revelations from the Nintendo Giga Leak, and stuff like Super Mario World was really more of a Super Mario Brothers 3 when they first started it. There's a bunch of artwork and some video in here.
I think we knew that from old EGMs.
Probably. There's the Super Donkey game that was never released. That's very similar to Yoshi's Island, I guess. What else did I
Yoshi like? Was originally skinny.
Yeah, Yoshi was not as cute, that's for sure. Nintendo considered another Zelda 2-style game.
Yeah, I feel like that we might have known that also.
These sprites, there's a video of the sprites about halfway down the page, and it looks really nice.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
And I think my favorite, the SNES had its own version of DOS. Mind-blowing.
Yeah. I buy that.
That's crazy, where they're actually typing like A drive and C drive and stuff. Anything else I really wanted to touch on here? No, those were the big ones for me.
Yeah, I haven't really looked into these too much yet. I guess I'm just waiting for other people to cover it.
Yeah, yeah. And just the last part. Is this our last news item? Yeah.
It is.
Super Mario 64 took 622 days to develop. So there's kind of a log or something within the a text file within the GigaLeaks that documented the development, and it looked like it took about 622 days. So I don't know why I thought that was interesting or why Kotaku thought it was interesting, but I did.
I guess I might have thought it took longer, because I bet, like, my prediction would have been that it started as like a Super FX game and then got moved over. That's not the case, but I would have been like, oh, they probably spent 3 years on that and it had two or three different iterations.
Yeah, yeah. And they had to write, yeah, they had to write a whole engine for it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a pretty impressive timeline. I've been on projects that were more than 622 days that produced far less.
Yeah, yeah, same here. But, yeah, the news only took us about 622 days to get through this time.
There you go. So we're just going to hop right into Game Club Games then, because we have a ton of news. And we do have some good features coming up. This episode is not one of those.
No. Might be an episode or two before we get to those. But yeah, we'll have some good stuff soon. Well, mine's up there first, so I guess I'll go first. The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past.
Now you said you had not played this much before?
No, I've played it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you were
talking
Super Metroid. Was that it?
Super Metroid I have not played.
All right, I got those confused. My apologies. And
yeah, on purpose, because I want to spend a lot of time on it, because in the past I just didn't get around to it. But yeah, A Link to the Past, when I got my Super Nintendo back in the day, I got the A Link to the Past package, and our bundle, I guess. And yeah, this came out in 92 in North America. Plays a lot like the original Legend of Zelda, except, you know, a few minor additions, and you're saving Zelda again. You are the last of the Hyrule Knights, I think. They actually give him kind of a background in this. And if you have, what's that book that came out a few years ago that details all of the Legend of Zelda?
Yeah, the Zelda Compendium. And then they made like a second one too.
Yeah. They placed this as a prequel to the original games, and it's the first game after, what's it, if you get the bad ending in Ocarina of Time? I think that's how it goes.
Yeah, I guess. I don't follow that Zelda timeline stuff, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me, like, just based on how things are named, that, like, Breath of the Wild is, Breath of the Wild is, like, the sequel to every single Zelda game.
Yes. Yeah, it kind of unifies them all. But, yeah, this got a few ports, you know, to Game Boy Advance, Wii, Wii U, 3DS, Virtual Console. And it's on the Switch now, which is how I played it, you know, this time. I didn't do a playthrough this time. I just kind of did a little reminder. I don't know, I played 45 minutes. And then I watched a speedrunner practicing a little bit with the Famicom version, Super Famicom version, because there's a lot of bugs in that one that don't exist in the North American version. Yeah, I mean, I would say what really blew my mind about this is it's the game everyone wanted. You know, quite often people want, and this is movies too, they think they want the same thing that they got before. You know, take Star Wars, for example. People thought they wanted the original Star Wars, but new. And, you know, that didn't really make a lot of people happy, I guess. I guess that's very debatable. But I think this is an example of they pretty much gave you The Legend of Zelda again, but just newer and a few new things. I mean, a lot of new things, but they kept the core of it, and man, it just worked. I mean, it's one of the greatest games of all time. Mm-hmm. You know, having the Dark World or the Dark Zone, whatever it's called, wherever Ganon is kept, and yeah, Dark World, and how the dungeons work with kind of manipulating your environment within, you know, the labyrinths. It's just, what a fantastic game. You know, the whole parallel worlds thing and the music and how beautiful it is. And it's all within 1 megabyte.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. The, I was going to say the terrible Genesis demo I did was bigger than that. It has far less content.
Yeah. I mean, these are super coders. So, when did you first experience this game?
Not for a while. So I did not have a Super Nintendo until kind of late. I was big into the CD systems. So I had a Sega CD and a TurboGrafx 16 CD. And that was pretty much all the money I had in the world at that point.
Yeah.
And I like playing RPGs on those. And I did not get into Super Nintendo really until... I got into Super Nintendo at kind of that golden era where the games were still cheap at Funko Land. Right?
Okay.
So that era in like 97, 98, when like the PlayStation was out and Super Nintendo games were worth nothing.
Yeah.
So I kind of got into it then because I got a lot of cheap games. So I probably played Link to the Past the first time in 97 or 98. So a while out there.
Okay.
And, yeah, I really liked it. It's weird because I liked Zelda a lot. I just didn't want to buy a third system. And, at that point, I didn't have a PlayStation. I didn't get a PlayStation until, like, 2001.
Wow.
Well, you know, part of it was, like, the years that I was, like, going back to college. I wasn't going to buy new systems while I was, like, trying to actually finish college and get a job as a programmer.
Yeah.
I really didn't have time for much else. So, yeah, I really liked it a lot. I strangely never did another playthrough until it was like December, January, you know, right around New Year's. I started it on the Switch.
Right, it's on a great way to play it.
It actually was a really good way to play it. And enjoyed it a lot. Second playthrough, really liked a lot. It was harder than I remember. There were a lot of like dungeons where I was down to like 2 hearts or something. You know, I'm like rolling into the last boss fight and I'm like, man, I am just about dead already. And like the heart drops, like, you know, healing, it's much more difficult than the later Zelda games. I mean, like Wind Waker, I never remember coming close to dying, and Twilight Princess never came close to dying. And then like Breath of the Wild, you die like crazy. But once you kind of figure the game out, you won't ever come close to dying.
Yeah.
Whereas Link to the Past, I was really like, every fight came down to the wire.
And you play the sequel, A Link Between Worlds, right? I think we talked about that.
Absolutely.
Before.
One of my favorite games of the previous decade.
I've yet to play that one.
Okay. Yeah, that you should definitely. I don't know. I think it'd be kind of weird playing it directly after. I think that'd be quite an experience.
I think so. A Link Between Worlds came out in 2013. And I think around that time I was playing a lot of A Link to the Past. And so I think that's why I didn't play it, because it looked the same. You know what I mean?
It's the same map, basically. I don't think there's a lot of differences in the map, if any. But because I had the big, like, you know, 13-year gap between playing them, I don't know that they're the same map. So I played that in 2013. So if I played Link to the Past in, let's say, 98, and then Link Between Worlds in 2013, and then Link to the Past again in, like, 2019, 2020, right? I'm not going to remember if the maps are the same between them.
Yeah, yeah.
It sure felt like it was the same map.
I really do think it is. Apparently, there's some comics of these, of Link to the Past, but I've never seen them.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and somehow you haven't played Link to the Past, just turn it off right now and just go play it.
Yeah, even if you don't like other Zelda games, you might like it. The art style is very, very nice. Like, great art, awesome soundtrack. I mean, the soundtrack from Link to the Past, like, songs from that get reused in every other Zelda game since it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just a bright, beautiful game. Almost flawless game. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, not much more to say about it other than how anticipated it was back in the day. Because it had been a while after the Adventure of Link, you know, and no one knew what was actually going to come out. Was it going to be another side scroller, you know? So I think everyone was really happy back then when it wasn't.
Yeah, I think people were definitely happy when back to the original style.
But speaking of side scrollers, want to talk about your game?
Yeah, I chose Pitfall again, just because I've been playing a lot of Uncharted, and Pitfall is like the ancestor to so many games. It's the ancestor to every platformer game, but then also things that are like where the theme is, I'm a jungle explorer looking for treasure. There's probably like a text adventure or something that predates it, but this is the thing that inspired a lot of people to build games in that style. And it's a fairly simple game, right? Run, jump, find. That's it, right? Pick up treasure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a game that was made for the Atari 2600, only requires one button. It's funny, I grew up playing it on the Intellivision, and always thought the Intellivision version must be the superior one, because it uses 2 buttons. There's one button to jump. Yeah, to get off the vine, you use a different button.
That's really annoying. I have not played that part.
So that's why I always thought that was better. And then much later, when I played the 2600 version, I realized, oh no, the 2600 version is actually the much better version. Part of it's the controller. Like, the joystick just is better for this style of game than the Intellivision disc. And only having one button is actually pretty nice. I haven't played a lot of the other versions. I mean, 2600 and Intellivision are the two I've played pretty much exclusively. It's been ported to, like, you know, a lot of different 8-bit computers. I don't think there's an official release on Apple. I think it was only on Atari and Commodore computers. The Commodore version, they like touched up the graphics a bit. It's still basically the same game, but like Pitfall Harry is, you know, in a different color outfit where he looks more like he's going to a rave than like he's going to explore the jungle.
I was going to say, I'm seeing on Wikipedia right now that there's a 5200 version, and I didn't know that.
There is, and that's like the Commodore one, they upgraded the graphics. Pitfall Harry still has the same color scheme, but like the trees have a little more detail and stuff. And it was, 10 or so years ago that someone finally figured out how to play a perfect game of Pitfall, which the creator didn't think was possible. So, like, the creator actually didn't think it was possible to collect all the treasures in the game within the amount of time. So it's a 20-minute time limit. Obviously, playing to the end of the time limit is not that hard. Obviously, you can stand still. But if you actually make an effort to keep playing all the way through the time limit, it's not that bad. But to, like, get a perfect game, you have to, like, figure out the tunnels. The tunnels, like, I guess what confused me as a kid and still today is, like, the tunnels seem to advance you forward a couple screens, but they kind of don't. Like, if you ever see the Pitfall map of how the tunnels map to the overworld screens, it's crazy.
That's what always confused me before I watched videos and listened to people that know what they're talk about this game. In fact, this time, it's funny. I usually, when we play an Atari game on this show, I own the game. Mm-hmm. But I think zero times on the show have I played and plugged in my 2600. Yeah. I've always emulated just because it's so easy. But so I emulated it a little bit and played it for probably longer than I played my game. But I watched No Swear Gamer do a playthrough of it and kind of talk about, you know, how you get through it. And it's pretty interesting. You know, at one point you have to walk, what, like 63 screens in one direction?
Okay. Yeah.
But also as a kid, I think, you know, because I had a 2600 when I was really young, I think I didn't get that. Some of the screens look almost identical. And I think sometimes I thought I was just walking in circles, you know?
Yeah.
But I would have never guessed that the tunnels were, as you said, like not connecting to the overworld like it looks.
So yeah, just a really fun game. I assume everybody has played this. The current speedrun record is 19 minutes, 10 seconds.
Wow. It's pretty ballsy for Activision to just have their logo at the bottom of the screen for the entire duration of the game.
I like it. I like it, man. I always sort of like that. They do that. Yeah. They do that in other games too.
That's just great.
Yeah, well, I mean, back in the day, man, if you saw Activision on a game box, you knew you were getting gold, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's just pretty funny. Well, what game do you choose next?
I'm gonna stick with the general, like, exploring the jungle for treasure theme, and I'm going to go with Tombs and Treasure.
I have not played this.
Yeah, you might like it. Have you ever played Shadowgate?
Yeah, this kind of looks like Shadowgate, kind of wizardry, Bard's Tale kind of thing.
Yeah, it's much more like Shadowgate. It's like Shadowgate, but it has an overworld to get between the different scenes.
Hmm. Yeah. It's hard for, I'm looking at it right now, it's hard for me not to talk about it because we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, give it a try.
I've been drinking some beer lately, so I'm going to go with Tapper.
Yeah, great game.
Because why not?
Yep, good pick. Although, if you played on any, like, collections, they only have Root Beer Tapper, not the original. So this is one, like, I must have 3 or 4 different arcade game collections, like for GameCube, PS2, so on, that have Tapper. Mm-hmm. But they're all the generic root beer Tapper. None of them are the Budweiser branded one.
Yep.
Which is the only way to play it.
Yeah, yeah. If any of our listeners have played any of these games or have anything retro going on, have any feedback about anything or any news, any cool project you're working on or know about, please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net. We'll drop you right on our site. And you could hit us up on Twitter at RGC Podcast. And our buddy Zach monitors all the social media stuff. Thank you, Zach. And he often corrects some mistakes I put up there or questions I have. But yeah, we have an email from Stanley who is answering a question from a long time ago saying, yes, he appreciates the show notes we have in each episode. And tragically and often for purchasing. So all those stuff we put on there, he wastes his money on just like we do.
Quite often. Yeah. I'm trying to cut back on the number of just strange retro things that I buy.
I'm running out of space and money.
Yeah. Well, like I'd mentioned before, my kids, my oldest kid is pretty close to college age. My youngest is not super far behind. And then, you know, my wife and I are talking about like downsizing or something. So I really can't buy a bunch more stuff.
Well, you could do what I know your family is a Star Wars, some Star Wars fans in your family, so you might already know this, but Mark Hamill bought, he lives in Malibu.
Okay.
And he bought his neighbor, the house next to him, went up for sale, and he bought it just so he could store collectibles.
Oh, okay.
Well, let, so you let can
me,
just do that.
Yeah, sure. Let me just get like 30 years of residual checks from Star Wars. And then I will get right on that plan. Actually, I did at one point consider buying my neighbor's house when it went up for sale. But only so that like we could like rent it to like, it's a long story, but like, you know, our parents are older. Like that's the long and the short version of it. Like if your parents are older and you're like, oh geez, where are they going to live? You know, cause maybe they have health problems or something. I don't want them in my house. Mm-hmm. So, but next door isn't technically in my house. all right. So, but we ended up not doing that plan.
It sounds like it could backfire.
It could have and could have. Instead, I'd get the neighbors that like literally burned a couch in their backyard one day. No, that's not a joke.
I know.
Let's see. Majors writes in to talk about a few things. He tells me there's no shame in playing games on easy mode, which I agree. I feel a little bit of shame because I feel like I should be better at games. But he says, yeah, it's kind of nice to just play a game and, you know, to tune out and, you know, take your mind off current events and stuff. Mm-hmm. Which I agree with. Like, that's why I've been playing a lot of games on easy lately. Just because I want to have a glass of wine or possibly multiple and not worry about, you know, not worry about dying constantly.
Yeah, platinuming every game. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I platinumed a single game. I do. Did I mention on the last episode that like when you put Uncharted on easy, it gives you a warning message about how like you won't get any trophies? Did I talk about that?
No, but yeah, trophies are the last thing I care about.
Like, oh no, no trophies. Oh boy. Android Bluetooth sync with PS4 controllers. A few years ago, we encountered a similar annoyance trying to pair Wiimotes to his phone to use as a physical controller. It was working, and then he got an updated phone, and Android felt that the Wiimote was too insecure, and the OS no longer allows it.
Wow.
I know you can do the Wiimote with the classic controller on, like, the Ouya, but that's a really old Android version at this point. the last interview we did, talking about the store demo CRT, at the Babbage's he worked at, they had composite input on their front display. There were native RGB 13-inch CRTs for Super Nintendo display units. Wow. Hmm. He happened to get one a long time ago and used it as his main RGB setup. Wanted to get into MSX. Said he got bit by the MSX bug a few years ago. Would definitely like to hear more about the MSX on the show. And he said when he was looking for a podcast about the MSX, he found one in English called Doors and Dungeons. Okay. I've not heard of that podcast. But then again, there's a million podcasts. Hugh struggles to comprehend listener emails. No, I just can't read. I told you my biggest trauma in school, in grade school, was being called on to read during class time. You know, they do that thing where it's like the teacher doesn't want to do their job, so they have students read chapters from the book out loud.
Yeah.
Like when they look for, when they're like looking in the classroom, I would try to slink under my desk as far as possible because I cannot read stuff out loud. Let's see. And then feedback on a couple of games. Montezuma's Revenge. He said he did get to play a few versions and agreed the SMS was the most approachable. And he said if you are interested in trying the MSX, there are a lot of MSX games with similar play mechanics to Montezuma's Revenge.
Yeah, that did not work out for me.
Short Circuit could not get the controls to work on archive.org. Yeah, there you go. I'm not alone. He's a little bit behind, so he has not started Link to the Past or Pitfall yet. Let's see. And then side story. I mentioned a few episodes ago about getting some PCE samplers, which I still have. They're right over here next to me. But he says he's been interested in them too, but didn't think they were worth the price. They're about $10 a piece, and there's, you know, maybe a dozen of them you can get online. But he recently won a lot of games, and in it was a copy of UltraBox number 4. Do I have UltraBox number 4? I think I have like 1, 3, and 6 or something crazy. Anyways, he says it was kind of fun to mess with, and that it has a database of released games, which is kind of fun to play with also. So, yeah. Yeah, so the two different samplers, there's Hyper Catalog and there's UltraBox. And I found, like, I have reviews of most of the Hyper Catalog, if not all of them, on my website. But, like, I found the Hyper Catalogs to be worth the 10 or 15 bucks for the most part. And UltraBox are really weird.
How so?
Yeah, well, see, they're like a collection. They're not so much like demo discs. It's like they have like small little, I would call them homebrew games, but they're by a company. So there'll be like some little mini PC Engine game on there, you know, like a little racing game or whatever. So not a full game, but something that looks like someone wrote as a homebrew demo. And then there's like digital comics. And then the one I have has like a fan art section. I guess I should just post a review of this thing someday. So, like, people would send their fan art into UltraBox, and then they would scan it and do whatever it took to convert that fan art to TurboGrafx-16 palette and resolution. And there's some really... Yeah, it's a crazy idea. they have, like, 100 of these photos on the disc. Some of them are just weird. You can imagine what people sending their art into a TurboGrafx or PC Engine magazine are like.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
And the games themselves are all just like, again, those games are small, not particularly awesome. And I think I mentioned like digital comic. It'll be something where like there's just an image and then some spoken dialogue over it. That's like some kind of like serial, I guess, that they're running.
Huh. Okay.
I think maybe if you got like every UltraBox game, maybe there's a complete story, but it's in Japanese, so I don't know what they're saying.
UltraBox is officially our topic of this episode.
Yeah, yeah. maybe I'll just get around to writing a review of like one of the UltraBox CDs and like posting a gallery of all the fan art.
So if they're like $10 now, how much were they when they came out?
I think they're equivalent of sampler discs. I assume they were like $5 or something. I don't really think they cost that much at the time.
I don't know if they came in magazines or something like that.
So Hyper Catalog, I think, was just sold in stores, you know, like just like a game. UltraBox feels like something that came in a magazine, but I don't have the magazine. But yeah, I think just for the fan art galleries alone, it's worth it. Although some of these are like, there's definitely some not safe for work fan art mixed in there. I mean, not anything like too crazy. Like I realize where like things can go. Yeah, the one I played also had like a full blown RPG included. And I don't know how long it was, but it was like there was like a town and an overworld and fights, like probably a 3 or 4 hour RPG on there.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah. And then Hyper Catalog is like has demos, and some of the demos are pretty long. It just depends which one you get. All of them, like the weird one is sorry, we're going way off topic here. Hyper Catalog, like almost every Hyper Catalog disc includes a full version of Military Madness. Like they got the license to that, and you're getting it every disc, whether you want it or not.
It's a good game, so why not? Mm-hmm. That's cool. And you weren't going off topic. It's literally our topic now.
Yeah. Next episode, we review all Hyper Catalog. All right. Email from Rick, who's answering social media questions, which I guess we had. Thanks to Zach for sending those up. He asked a question about arcade cabinets you would like to see Arcade 1UP make next. So let's see. He mentions Virtual On, because you could link two cabinets together.
That would be amazing.
Street Fighter Third Strike. I know they did Street Fighter 2 like every variation, so that isn't that's plausible. And a candy cab.
Yeah, that would be pretty nice. And a Third Strike you could link too. So that'd be a nice little series they could do there.
Wait, candy cab is not a game. That's a type of arcade.
Just a style. Yeah. Style. Yeah. Ah, yes. Okay. What games would you want 1UP to come up with?
Put me on the spot like that. What would I like to say? I know they've done Dragon Slayer recently. Right. Did they do Dragon Slayer or is that a Kickstarter?
I don't think so.
Is there a Kickstarter? I think there's a Kickstarter for someone to do a Dragon Slayer style release like that. That's what I'm confused about.
Well, my biggest picks would be Tron, Discs of Tron, and maybe a Super Off-Road.
Okay. Yeah, Discs of Tron would be really good. Although part of that was really the experience of being inside the cabinet.
Yeah. Yeah. That environmental cab is insane.
Yeah. That's what I was most impressed by.
But Super Off-Road would be great for parties. I don't know about a 3/4 size one because you'd be really shoulder to shoulder there.
Yeah, that's why I'm so like kind of down on these because they're just not big enough.
And maybe a what's it called? House of Dead to have that series on there. That would be great.
Have they done shooters yet?
They did Buck Hunter.
Okay. Oh yeah, yeah, they did.
Big Buck Hunter, yeah.
So they could do like a shooter collection. Maybe get Crossbow on there. Have they done Spy Hunter?
I don't think so.
Because maybe they could do like a steering wheel collection, like Spy Hunter, Pole Position.
Yeah. Outrun.
Outrun, yeah. That would be a cool one.
That would be a cool one.
Pole Position, I remember having a cabinet that I liked a lot too. Or perhaps I'm thinking Pole Position too now. So I guess on social media, people gave us a lot of suggestions, too. Someone would like to see a Jurassic Park trilogy. I could definitely see that. Mm-hmm. He said he would give them more money if you could buy one large cabinet and then the games, like swappable games for it. So like a Neo Geo model for that. Like you buy one big cabinet and then a cartridge or USB with more games.
Or even downloadable. Mm-hmm. You plug it into the internet and do it that way.
Yeah.
Little app store.
Yeah. So one that I think makes a lot of sense, twin stick shooters. Robotron, Smash TV, Maximum Carnage combo.
Yeah, you got to put Cloak and Dagger on there too.
Okay. Yeah. Heavy Barrel, no, because you have those are different style sticks. Let's see, Tapper, someone mentions. Firefox iRobot Major Havoc collection.
Nice.
Wild West, Cowboys of Moo Mesa, or Sunset Riders. Spider-Man, someone mentions. Another vote from someone for Discs of Tron. Red Baron and Tank. Let's see, Alien vs. Predator. And Bad Dudes. Bad Dudes they've not done yet. That's not on any of their collections.
I don't think they have. I would... And I want to point out, too, someone says Star Wars Arcade... And Star Wars Trilogy. That would be great. That Star Wars Trilogy game, that's a hard one to emulate. That's a good game. It really is.
And then favorite beat 'em up brawler series. So this was like an older one's been replied to here. I don't know about series per se, but Capcom pretty much rules the roost with titles like Armored Battle, Final Fight, The Punisher, and AVP. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, if thank you for everyone for writing in on email and social media. We love social media comments, but email is preferred. It just, I don't know, to us, it just feels more personal and you can kind of write longer, you know, get more detailed. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're still going to butcher it.
Yeah, again, it's my inability to read out loud.
Yeah, me too. By this time of the evening, I've been programming and I have a toddler screaming at me and I'm pretty much cross-eyed at this point. But if you would like for us to butcher your emails, please email at retrogameclub.net.
Yep. And I think that's everything. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.